to Two Peas in a Podcast. This is our fourth edition. I'm Michelle and...
I'm Trevor. I was asleep, but I'm
here. That's okay. The expert and the novice. So what are we going to be talking about today, Trevor?
Well, I would just like to have a short time to explain to the listeners that there was a day on the 24th of January when Gawler hit 48 degrees Celsius, and that is such a high temperature, it's possibly the highest temperature, it's about 120 Fahrenheit, that any capital in the world has ever reached, because it's not really possible to reach that temperature. And I mean, I walked out at about 2:30 out of what was a fairly cool house, and I was hit by this furnace of heat. The hot air was just ridiculous. And I just see that it was a killer temperature. And I did lose 2 chooks. I lost a whole lot of leaves. My tomatoes were so bewildered they stopped producing fruit for a while. And so it was such an occurrence that I think we should, you know, just notice it here, that on the 24th of January 2019, we had a world record temperature of 48 degrees Celsius in the shade. You
know? I know, and I was lucky enough to go back to work on that day, and I agree, we sort of left a relatively cool workspace, a bit like when you open the oven door and you put your face too close, yeah, that's what it was like. Yeah. I was lucky, I didn't lose any pets, but I do know my son, who's home from uni at the moment, actually had a really busy day managing all the animals sort of thing, and the chooks and the ducks, and even he said the ducks just literally languished in the pond and he was hosing them off. We were very fortunate, but as we've spoken about before, I've got a very, very shady backyard, thank goodness.
Yes.
But plant-wise, my tomatoes were the same as yours, Trevor. They just basically look at me in anger now and have refused to produce anything else. I think I might have to rip them up. And the fruit trees, lots of leaf damage.
Well, I won't be giving up. I've had a look since. It's quite a few weeks past, and they're all recovering. They were well watered, and most things, except for a few, will do all right. But it reminded me that it's not just heat waves. It's frost, hail, storm, high winds. They occur so often that when you're a gardener, you're going to be hit by these unforeseen circumstances. I didn't mention wildfire there because I'm so afraid of it. But so we're really going to be talking about how to prepare the soil today. And we're talking specifically about spuds, because spuds are pretty typical of gross feeders, heavy feeders. So you have to prepare the soil well for them. But that's hard work and it's money. So when you start out gardening, okay, you've had a great success with herbs, because everyone just about has good success with herbs, and you're enjoying the smell in the kitchen and the health benefits and the taste benefits of herbs. But now when you get to growing vegetables, you can't really just have ordinary soil. You really need top class soil, and that involves work and money. So
it also involves that ongoing commitment to the soil, doesn't it? I know with garden beds I've got at school, people put all this soil in them and they were very excited, and then the following year when I asked for further funding to top up the garden beds, because of course you need to, it was met with great shock, Trevor. But last year you did that. Well, I said, yes, that's correct, last year we did, and we need to keep this going because the vegetables need really good soil all the time.
Yeah, well, that's true. So you need to be serious about gardening, because it's like, you know, many of the other hobbies. It would be like if you had knitting for a hobby, or restoring old cars for a hobby, or even brewing home brew. It's not something you're going to start and then drop because you spend money. In the case of a garden, you're going to have to start out by building a shed. Now, the shed needs to be big enough for a wheelbarrow. You need a good fork, and a good fork can cost money. You need a shovel, a rake, and a planter's hoe or a hoe. You need some sort of irrigation, a hose, a sprinkler, or a black poly pipe. And then you need your seed, you know, and then you need bags of fertilizer, and you need other odds and sods. So you are going to be spending money, and that does mean that you're committing yourself a fairly long term, and it means that you're a special sort of person, you know. It means you're not just doing it to show your neighbours and your friends how good you are. You're actually doing it because you've been inspired and you want to have a garden. Now, it's not hard to want a garden these days.
I know doctors... I want a garden all the time, but as you can tell by my garden, it's very sporadic in its luck.
Yeah, well, I mean, the doctors are telling you that you know, stop eating quite so much meat and have a few more veggies for your digestive tract and for the antioxidants, which kill off the free radicals. And and so, you know, it is being recommended widely that you teach your kids where food comes from, and all that sort of stuff is happening. And we said last week, we actually were quite poetic about how good it is to be in the kitchen with your own home produce. That does include herbs, but it also includes all the other veggies. Everyone will tell you if they're fresh, they're good. And so those reasons, and you get exercise too. Let's face it, you get a bit of exercise. It's not strict exercise, but you keep on the move, and it's one of those active things that will probably keep you younger as well. I'm not guaranteeing that.
I mean, in May, I had a gorgeous incident at school with the kids the other day. We were digging up the garden beds, getting them ready to put a few bits and pieces in, and I said to the kids, we need to dig them over. And one of the boys discovered a forgotten potato. Honestly, it was the most fantastic thing in the world, and it was great for me to realise that actually it is that real emotional excitement that you've grown something. So this potato has taken pride of place in the front of the class. They were discussing how we would be able to cook the potato so everyone could eat some of it. They're not going to. That is not going to happen with this one potato. You're right. It really makes you realise, yes, okay, it is all these health benefits, but the emotional benefits, that feeling that you've created something, is fantastic, but it isn't easy.
Yeah, it isn't easy, and you do have to be devoted because you are going to be spending time at it. So that's the introduction. We chose spuds simply because it's our staple food. It's our basic food. I mean, Asia's got rice and we've got spuds. And so we've always grown them, and they are a good way of starting because there are probably unproven but fairly widely held beliefs that spuds produce a chemical that breaks down clay, and since South Australian soil there's a lot of clay there, well then it's a good start. In fact, my father, after the World War II, he married a woman, my mother, and he had two kids, my brother and I, and then he bought a suburban house, and finally he got round to planting the front lawn, and the advice that he got, and he was following all the advice that he got, it was to plant spuds before the lawn, you see.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he started, and he just was amazed how hard that clay was, you know, and so he watered it, and it was a bit sticky, and he just reeked out some little furrows and just managed to hide the spuds under the soil. But then he looked next door, and we were down by Morphville Racecourse at this stage, and there were stables everywhere, and next door, right next door to us on the east side, was a horse stable. And so he went and chatted up the guy who ran the horse stable, and there was a pile of horse manure there that had to be carted away, and it cost him money, so he said we could have it, you know, and it was about the size of a car. It was quite a large heap, so that was the end of Dad's work. He said, son, and we were about, I don't know, we were about 8 or 10, or the two of us were 3 years apart. So we carted it and we buried his spuds beneath it. I told you last week, I think, that I don't particularly like horse manure, but that's because of the thoroughbred racing industry do use vets a lot. But this wasn't quite that bad. This was aged and it was quite helpful, actually, and it does break down clay quite well. So we covered
it. You were traumatised by having to move all that horse manure, and that's why you didn't like it. No. Much better reason.
Well, actually, it was beautiful stuff, to be honest, and I have used it since. It can be good, but just be careful of it. So that gives you an idea of how the myth of potatoes starting out soil and breaking up the clay has come about. But what I'm going to tell you today is to prepare the soil even better than that, Michelle. Oh. Even better, because I'm with you. And I'm also with most gardeners that you just get them ridiculously fertile. You do not allow the question of fertility to enter the equation, you see. So I think you should really buy, in this first patch, you should buy a green manure crop as well. Now, the commercial growers are not organic. I give only organic advice, but the commercial growers do use certain non-organic methods, which I'm not going to discuss because I don't like them.
A friend of mine was told by a potato farmer once that the chip industry likes the great big potatoes,
and
he actually said, I will stick whatever it takes into the soil to make those potatoes bigger, and she hasn't eaten a chip ever since. It was it's horrifying. I agree with you. So yeah, all the advice we kind of condone is that whole let's make it as chemical free as possible.
My formula here is in your backyard that hasn't been worked before. Measure out a 2 meter by 4 meter plot or a 3 meter circle if you want to put a sprinkler in the middle and just spray them. And pile everything on top, probably about a cubic meter of compost of some sort, and then put fertilizer pellets like Rapid Razor or the other one.
Blood and Bone.
Yeah, and then put on some sulfate of potash and rock phosphate. Now, like tomatoes, potatoes don't like nitrogen overly much. They like potash and they like phosphate because potash is good for flowering, and they are tubers, which are a kind of flowering, and for roots and backbone, the structure of the plant, whereas nitrogen is all about leaf, and you have a disaster with potatoes if it's all leaf. And plenty of people have been very happy at the start of the potato season with all their beautiful big plants that they're growing in the backyard, only to find there are no tubers. So you are looking to get rid of nitrogen, really. And the way of doing that is once you put all this compost and fertilizer and mineral mix on top of the soil and just dug it in a little bit, then you rake it one way and you spread seed over the top of it. Now it can be barley, it can be wheat, it can actually be bird seed, but you just spread seed over it. You rake it the other way and you water it in well and you wait about 6 weeks. So the theory here is a philosophy of how to work as well. You're not in a rush. Okay, there is no time limit on your gardening. You'll just do it however you want, but it does take time. So in 6 weeks, the barley or the wheat or whatever you've planted, and it can be sunflowers and it can be anything you've got. It can be mustard or anything. So that will come up and it will be about 150 mil high. And you dig that into the soil, because when that digs in, it's like we talked about mulch in the mulch podcast, in that it has nitrogen drawdown. So in order to decompose, it has to get nitrogen from the soil, and it restores that nitrogen to the soil, but it's a much subtler blend and it's not quite so potent, which is the trouble with all the non-organic stuff, and that it just grows everything too quick, and you find you then have to apply all sorts of stuff because the plants are growing too quick and they're too weak. But so I'm advocating, and this is probably today's lesson, I'm advocating that you put in at least one green manure crop and you start doing this in about now, about March, and you dig it in about June or July, and by about August your bed has all rotted down, it looks perfect, it's aerated, it's fluffy, and it's usable, and that's when you plant your spuds. So it's,
okay.
It's a long period. It's, you know, 3 or 4 months that you're waiting, but
I'm just thinking of a spot in the garden at the moment behind some of my raised garden beds, but I've taken a vine out so the sun gets to it now. I'm going to do that there, actually. I think that'd be great because the soil's actually really hard. It's been compacted, but I'm going to give that a go. And plant in August, you're saying? Do the potatoes in August?
Well, we're a bit fortunate. Most of the world has frost.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're just extraordinary in that we can plant at any time because it's cooled by frost. So if you've got frost, yes, you plant in August because it spends about a month underground. So you plant them. You plant them by, if you've got a 2 meter by 4 meter bed, you make about 4 trenches lengthwise. So 4 long trenches, I'd say about 400 millimeters apart, and about 150, 200 millimeters deep. And you, as you dig the trenches, you heat the soil between the trenches. You put the potatoes in the trench, and then you come back with your hoe or your shovel, and then you mound up over the potatoes, so the potatoes are sunk about between 400 and 500 millimeters beneath the ground.
Okay.
So well, it's only 200 millimeters really, but you've mounded them, so there's a mound at the end of the day. And as they grow, in about a month or two's time, a little green shoot will appear. Don't worry about the month; that's perfectly good. They're tubers; they're not green leaves. So in about a month's time, a little shoot will appear, it will start to grow bigger, and you can pile the straw on top of that too, because you're trying to make sure that the tubers are not exposed to the sun. They will go green, and that is a bit poisonous. So that's the way you grow spuds. You do have to irrigate them every week, keep them damp. And the big advantage of this whole system really is that you then can plant two more crops without fertilising. So this is one of those rotational things, but you probably need six of these beds to get the full six bed rotation. And potatoes aren't supposed to be planted more often than once every 7 years in a plot of land, believe it or not.
Okay.
Because, well, nematodes build up in the soil and they are part of the nightshade family. They are subject to nematodes. The other thing you must remember about potatoes is there's been three major disasters worldwide with potatoes because they're not necessarily a home crop, they are a commercial crop. And Ireland, just about, I think 1.5 million people died and 1.5 million people left Ireland because of the potato famine, and that was due to a potato disease because they'd been planting the same spud over and over and over again. There was got into the because these are vegetative reproduction. The mother that you put in the ground, the seed potato, grows a whole lot of little children, and then you can plant those children again. But if you keep on doing that, you get some bad results. So you are supposed to buy certified seed. You can actually plant the potatoes out of your pantry because they are the sons and daughters of the certified seed, and there's not much danger planting that second lot. But then you don't go on planting them, you just plant them. The ones you get from the growers are all certified, or the sons of certified, and you can plant them, but you can't keep on planting them. So you are supposed to get back 10 times what you plant.
Oh, wow.
Now, Peter Cundall from Gardening Australia said that he got back 50 times as much as he planted, and it's possible that in certain soils, because he's on the Tamar Valley and it could be beautiful soil, and in certain climates you could get, best I've ever got is 17 times. But you're supposed to get a decent return. You can do what my father did, which is just pop them in clay and put a bit of stuff over the top. He probably got back what he planted, actually. So the reason we went to all this trouble to build up the soil and to dig in a green manure and let it rot is because we wanted 10-to-1 result. Yeah. For every one we planted, we wanted to get back, 10 bigger ones, really. And you can follow that soil up. It's so good now that you can follow it up without fertilising. I'm not stopping you from fertilising, but if you plant peas or beans, you'll be fine. They'll just come up beautifully because there's enough left in that soil to fertilise legumes, no trouble. And after that, you can actually follow them up with a third crop without really fertilising. But probably something like carrots is better than broccoli, because broccoli is a gross feeder. It would grow, but you'd probably have to fertilise it, whereas carrots like old manure. Carrots don't particularly like fresh manure. They
didn't know that.
No, so you can follow that up with two other crops, and it usually works, but you do really need 8 of these beds, and that system that I've described is good for all 8 of them. Don't worry, it will never be too fertile. It's aged by the green manure process, and it's a start. You can certainly keep adding more each year. There's no problem with that either. But so that's the lesson for today, children.
Lesson for today. And I just want to add, grow potatoes, because a friend of mine once said, why would you bother growing potatoes, they're cheap? And I said, have you tasted a homegrown potato? And if you have, you absolutely understand why they're a fantastic crop to grow. They're like, taste nothing like what you are going to buy in the shop, and they're absolutely 100% worth it. So thank you very much, Trevor. I expect to see lots of potato growing around Gawler, and I'm actually going to go home and do that green crop idea.
Yeah, well, there are a few other things you probably need to know if I've got time. There are a lot of different sorts of potatoes. 2,000 or 3,000 come from Peru, actually. So there are Kennebec potatoes, which are the big one, meant specifically for chips, and there are others like it, but they're a good hard potato and they won't break down if you fry them. For mash, that is, what are the very best for mash? Well, I'm told it's Kipfler and Ruby Lou for mash, and your Dutch creams are the best for baking. The only trouble is, Nicola are good for all three, and everyone realises that if you're good for all three, you've got a marketing bonus. So just about everything claims to be good for all three, but it's not true. You'll tell that there's some that are definitely softer than others. Yeah. Sebago and Desiree are the ones in Gawler that people recommend, but there are 5,000 types, you know. There's King Edwards and
wow. What are the little ones? What are the, you know, are they
Kifler? They're Kifler, yeah.
Yeah, they're nice.
And there is another one like that too.
Yeah, they're nice, just steamed with a bit of chives and butter.
So I can go on because we haven't mentioned sweet potato.
We have to mention sweet potato.
Well, the benefits of the potato are in the skin. And they are, that is the Irish potato that is in the skin. They're freshly picked, small spuds. You just wash them and boil them in their jackets, and that's where the nutrition and the taste are. They're rich in magnesium and potassium, vitamin B and C. That's the ordinary potato, but the sweet potato is probably a bit tastier and a bit better for you, really. It has something that's called beta-carotene. Now, that's the orange colouring that you get in carrots as well, and apparently it's good for absorbing vitamins A, B and C without causing any ill effects.
Okay, I love sweet potato, my favourite veg.
It is. Have you grown it?
Well, I did, and then the chickens got out, but that's the story of my life. I grew this, and then the chickens got out.
Yeah, well, it takes a bit longer. It takes 5 to 7 months. It needs lots of water, you know. It needs, well, so does the other sort, at any rate. It's a subtropical plant, so it needs 7 months of warm, frost-free weather. But the soil is the same. It needs to be free-draining, rich in potash. And the tubers actually grow down of this, so maybe you didn't realise that. I think it's more related to the carrot than it is to the potato, because if you plant it on the surface, you'll have to dig deep to get them all out.
Okay.
So they're often planted in mounds. Yeah. So you build the mound and you put them in the mouth.
Okay.
Because they will go down, rather than potato, which you're always trying to hide from the sun because of the greening effect. These ones you plant on mounds or in mounds, and the leaves of the sweet potato are very nice and subtle too.
I did not know that.
So there, am I out of time? I bet I am.
Yeah, but everyone's going to rush off and plant their potatoes now. What are we going to talk about next time? Have we decided?
We haven't. Peas and beans were next on my list, but...
We can discuss it. All right. So thank you very much. This is Michelle.
And Trevor.
And we will see you next time.